You're listening to another.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Friday, May the 8th. Goodness gracious, the calendar keeps on moving. And here we are well into spring, and I hope all of you have had a great week. I thank you for joining me so that we can play that infamous game of catch-up that we seem to engage in at the end of every week, and I'm so glad to be able to do it with you. To cover the issues in a way that the mainstream media would not dare, for a whole bunch of reasons. Those of you familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. Of course, that agency was split up, diced, and you name it, they did it to it, put it under the Department of Homeland Security, or as I call it, the Department of Homeland Surrender. And through the dysfunction of that agency, and it's really designed dysfunction. Both political parties are thrilled with the current set of circumstances, believe it or not. I don't care what they say. Watch what they do, not what they say. My mom, may she rest in peace, used to say talk is cheap. We as a nation are digging one hell of a hole for ourselves and for our citizens so that the folks at the very tippy top of that food chain can profit tremendously, but their profits may be short-lived also. But in any event, that's what this program usually focuses about, the multifaceted issue of immigration and how it truly is impacting our country and our citizens. For those of you that are new to the program, I have a couple of websites I would love for you to go visit, and we'll talk about them as the show progresses. But my own personal website is michaelcutler.net. C-U-T-L-E-R, one word, michaelcutler.net. I'm a senior fellow with a terrific organization, been working with them for a whole bunch of years out in California. My friends in Santa Barbara, California, capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. You know, as goes California, so goes the rest of the country. They have borne the brunt of illegal immigration for many years. Of course, this isn't just about the so-called four border states. We are, as I always point out, a nation of 50 border states. But if you look at the dysfunction in California, the economic issues, the gang issues, all of those issues, and this isn't about vilifying immigrants, but it's about making a clear distinction between legal immigration, which is supposed to serve America and Americans, and illegal immigration, which creates chaos for almost all of us and profits for others, well, then that's the distinction we need to make. I also write for a wonderful bunch of wonderful people, Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I'm very pleased, proud to be a columnist for them. I have recently begun writing for Progressives for Immigration Reform, PFIR. Just punch that into Google. You'll get right to their website. They do a fabulous job of getting the issue out there, and as their name suggests, they lean to the left. See, this isn't an issue of left versus right, folks. I don't care what the media says. That's another one of the big lies. This is about right or wrong, and I don't care where you stand politically. If you're an American, we should all be on the same page, at least on this issue. I also write for The Social Contract. I'm in their current magazine, and I will be in their fall issue also. I'm in the winter issue. The spring issue is coming out shortly. I'm not in the spring issue, but I will be in the fall issue. So here we are. You know, it's about writing for a bunch of different websites, doing my radio show, appearing on as many television and radio programs as possible. And I have to put in a plug for a couple of upstart networks, the Newsmax, One American News Network. They're still covering the issue. But if you look at the mainstream media, immigration has been almost entirely taken off the table, at least from a reasonable perspective. CNN, MSNBC are off in the stratosphere someplace. They're on another planet. Fox News doesn't cover this, frankly, as often as they should and the way that they should. And so Newsmax is out there. One American News Network is out there. They are new outfits. They are trying to provide the truth. J.D. Hayworth has a terrific show at Newsmax. He just went over to primetime. I've been on with him many, many times. He's a former member of Congress. So these are the news sources that are filling the vacuum created by the lunacy that the mainstream media, for the most part, isn't covering. I mean, ABC News has been talking about visa fraud, very important issue, but to really put everything in perspective and put a bow around it doesn't do it. But I want to start out by making a point that when we talk about immigration, it's not only illegal immigration. You know, I do speaking events around the country. And very often the inclination when I'm introduced is to say, here's Mike Cutler, former senior special agent. He's going to talk about illegal immigration. No, I'm going to talk about immigration, period, because the legal system has no integrity. Of course, illegal immigration has, by its very name, no integrity. And the legal system has many components. That's why I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine a while back. I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. And the point that I was making is that when politicians say, well, first we're going to secure the southern border, that border that's supposed to separate the U.S. from Mexico, what they're really saying is we have four border states. And that's one of the biggest lies imaginable. It's right up there with the check is in the mail, and I'll let you add a few more to that list, because we have 50 border states. So in essence, what they're saying is we'll halfway kind of sort of plug one hole in the bottom of that colander that you use to drain pasta, and now you can use that that utensil for the kitchen as a bucket to carry water. Just ignore all the other holes. Now imagine if instead of trying to carry water in that colander, you were carrying a deadly fluid, and if any of it leaked out, there might be dire consequences. Well, that's immigration. You know, I had an argument with a producer at 60 Minutes. He called me back, and we had this conversation about the way they had covered a recent Jay Johnson interview. And he said to me, you know, Mr. Cutler, you really don't believe that immigration has something to do with terrorism, do you? You don't really believe that the people who run our borders just want to hurt us. They just want to come here and work because they're so desperate and they're starving, and it's an act of compassion to allow them in. And I said to this guy, I said, do you really think that everybody who comes to the United States from another country wants to mow your lawn? I said, how big is your lawn? And he seemed kind of put off by it, and he said, listen, there's no evidence that these people that come here want to hurt us. I said, what about the 9/11 attacks? What about the Tsarnaev brothers? What about the list of other terror attacks, the 93? And he said, well, yeah, but, and did not want to have a conversation. So I read to him a quote, and it was a quote from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And he said to me, what are you quoting from? That doesn't sound reasonable. It's hard to believe that this is the way things are. And I told him, I'm quoting to you a segment of a report that was issued by the staff of federal agents and attorneys who worked for the 9/11 Commission. And the report that I'm quoting to you was published as an official government document of the United States government. It's available through the government online. It's available, or was available, in bookstores. I don't know if you can still get it that way, but you can certainly go to the government printing office and order it. This is an official report. It's not a supermarket tabloid. And this producer got very flustered, and he said, well, I don't know. It just seems kind of extreme. I said, kind of extreme to talk about the ways that terrorists have been able to enter our country, the way they've been able to acquire false identity documents and multiple names so they can go about their deadly preparations? I said, this isn't a Tom Clancy novel. This is history. It happened in 93 with the two terror attacks at the CIA and the first attack at the World Trade Center. It happened on 9/11. It happened with the Times Square bomber. And even with the Times Square bomber, and I know I've spoken about this on my program in the past, but it bears repeating, no less an authority than Ray Kelly referred to Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, as an example of homegrown terror. Classic example of a homegrown sleeper. Homegrown sleeper, by the way, doesn't work. A sleeper, by definition, is a foreign national, comes into the country and awaits that signal, that tap on the shoulder, the email, the phone call, telling him or her that they're about to carry out an attack and it's time to get going. That's what a sleeper generally is. Faisal Shahzad came here as a 20-year-old with a student visa, and then he acquired citizenship about a year before he carried out the attack. I believe it was last week I spoke about the terror suspect who was arrested in Ohio by the FBI, came here from Somalia, subsequently applies for citizenship to get a U.S. passport as an intrinsic part of his plan to go to Syria and commit terror or commit battle or commit himself to battle against our soldiers fighting on the side of the terrorists. His brother was already there. And instead what they did was they trained him and said, go back to America. They showed him how to break into houses. They said, look, break into houses, steal people's guns, and then go out there and kill soldiers, kill law enforcement. So, you know, for him to go there and get trained and come back, his citizenship was an integral part of the program. And when I mentioned it to this supposed journalist at the flagship program of CBS News, 60 Minutes, he said, Mr. Cutler, I've got another phone call. He didn't want to hear it. You know, the first step in solving a problem is to acknowledge you have a problem. 14 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. Thank God I'm alive. I haven't aggravated my quota yet. If I had ignored the fact that I had cancer, I wouldn't be here now. Folks, America now suffers from cancer. It's the crimes committed by transnational gangs, drug trafficking organizations. If you want to know if our borders are truly secure, forget those nonsense arrest statistics spewed by the Department of Homeland Surrender. Heroin and cocaine are not produced in the United States. Every gram of those substances are smuggled into the country and provide graphic evidence of a failure of border security. We are in the midst of probably the worst heroin epidemic in history. Published reports indicate that the greatest amount of heroin seized by the DEA, I believe it was either last year or in 2013, greatest amount, guess which border state? DEA sees the greatest amount of Mexican heroin in New York State. And it is a border state, you know? So when you look at this overall picture, you realize that the immigration component that the media doesn't want to talk about and that most politicians lie about is at the crux of so many of our problems. I listen to these analysts on TV, and they say, wow, we could only enact comprehensive if that dysfunctional Congress could finally deal with immigration and give millions of people identity documents and permission to work. Think what the economy would do. Yeah, the economy would crash and burn altogether. The issue is very simple. We don't have enough jobs. We have a shortage of jobs. We have an extreme shortage of jobs. And yet when I listen to these news programs, whether it's, you know, on the weekdays, on the weekend, on Sunday, the talk shows, they all use the same phrase. To the man and woman, every CEO of major corporations in America talk about how many jobs they have without workers. If only they had the workers. They are lying through their teeth. These CEOs are lying through their teeth. This is purely about bringing in huge numbers of foreign workers to suppress the wages of Americans and ultimately to replace Americans. I can't remember the name of the movie, but about a year ago, about 10 years ago, there was supposedly a sort of comedy, I guess, black humor, if you will, horrible humor, gallows humor. And the so-called joke was people training their replacements from India. Well, it's happening, folks. It's happening now. There's nothing humorous about it. And when you see these economic analysts, and I don't know where they went or what they studied or where they studied it or what's in their coffee, but none of them will talk about the remittances, the money being wired out of the United States by foreign workers. Think what that does to our economy. Last year, between $125 and $200 billion shipped whole out of the United States, and that's just the visible money. God only knows how much money moves under the radar. And if you look at the multiplier effect, that every dollar that's pumped into the economy generates three more dollars of commerce, well, if you yank $125 billion out of the economy, the impact is roughly the same as taking $400 billion and adding it to our debt. How does that help us? And why doesn't anybody on those talk shows address that issue? All they talk about is we need the workers and we'll get them out of the shadows, which is another lie. You know, Lou Barletta, and I just wrote a piece, by the way, for Progressives, my part two, analyzing what Rand Paul is saying on immigration, that he wants limitless numbers of foreign workers with high-tech visas. Holy smoke. That's crazy stuff. It's even worse than Ted Cruz, who wants a 500% increase. Rand Paul wants no limits at all. Everything goes, you know, the roaring 20s followed by the Depression. And Hillary Clinton wants to up the ante and make Obama look like a piker and really give everybody everything if they come here from another country. This is lunacy. You know, you don't bring sand to the beach. You don't add workers when you don't have enough jobs. And it's lie after lie because this is what the corporations want. They hope that they're going to bring in some consumers, and they know they're going to hammer labor, so the wages will go down. This is a losing proposition from every perspective. And then in the context of all of this, we have what happened in Baltimore, the riots. And we have the politicians talking about the hopelessness of the poverty-stricken inner cities such as Baltimore. And Baltimore holds a special place in my heart because my mom lived there as a young girl. I used to visit family members there every summer. It was my favorite road trip to get in the car with my mom and dad, usually just around sunrise, and we'd get to the Jersey Turnpike and zip down to Baltimore. And it was a big deal because I'd get to see some of my cousins and aunts and uncles and so forth, and it was a, you know, whoopee, here we are. Not aunts, but my uncle, actually. And everybody thought this was really neat. And to see that town that, you know, I have such fond memories of, ripped to shreds by rioters, to look at the abject poverty, to look at the disenfranchisement of Americans, those nonsense speeches the politicians make aren't going to solve anybody's problems. Bringing in more workers is not going to solve anybody's problems. And the American people have lost their mind. They listen to these speeches, and nobody seems to have the ability to question what they're hearing. I want you to think about something. How many times have we heard Hillary Clinton talk about the need for wage equality? How many times have we heard Obama say that we needed a $10.10 an hour minimum wage to address the issue of wage equality? We've seen the workers demonstrating for $15 an hour when they work in the food industry, the fast food industry. This is about wage equality. Take out your calculator, folks. Look at the numbers and tell me how $10.10 an hour is going to do anything about wage inequality. It won't do a darn thing. $10.10 an hour works out to just over $20,000 a year, presuming that the worker works a 40-hour work week and works 52 out of 52 weeks a year. 21 or 22,000. $15 an hour works out to a little over $30,000 a year. Wage equality? What kind of an opulent lifestyle do you think you're going to get on that old TV show, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, on $15 an hour? Do you think $15 an hour is going to move people from squalor and poverty into mainstream middle-class America? You see, what people don't question is what in the world the politicians are talking about. Because everybody wants to hear in that promise of wage equality, increased wages. But that's not what it's about. You see, that's one of the big lies that we're being told, and absolutely nobody is challenging it. And I haven't spoken about this in a while, so maybe it's worth talking about it. But Alan Greenspan talked about wage equality when he testified for Chuck Schumer. And what was so amazing was that when he talked about wage equality, you suddenly realize what his goal was. Alan Greenspan is not about strengthening the middle class, but about destroying the middle class. I kid you not. I kid you not. Because Alan Greenspan, this brilliant economist that everyone holds out as the genius of the 21st century, 20th century, he's lying through his teeth. Let me give you a for instance. He testified for Chuck Schumer, and Chuck was the architect of the agricultural amnesty provisions of the 1986 amnesty. He was part of the Gang of Eight. Chuck Schumer, my old congressman, who was never my representative. And he calls this hearing on comprehensive immigration reform, April 30th, 2009, and lo and behold, there's Alan Greenspan. And what you need to understand is Schumer's chairman of the committee. The people who testify at that committee do so with the approval of the chairman, Chuck Schumer. So this, and he was one of Chuck's guys, you see. So the message being delivered by Greenspan is the message that Schumer wanted delivered. You know, I've done a bunch of hearings. I know what goes on behind the scenes. It's kind of like being at a trial, and the attorneys call their expert witnesses to further their agenda, to further their case, whether it's defense or offense, you know, prosecution or defense attorney, or if it's a plaintiff in a civil lawsuit. You bring in the witnesses that are going to help your side of the argument. So Schumer brings in Alan Greenspan because these guys are singing on the same page. They're singing the same music. They have lousy singing voices, maybe as bad as mine, but this wasn't an accident that Greenspan shows up at the hearing. It wasn't like he had nothing else to do that day, so he popped in. This was carefully orchestrated days, weeks in advance. So I'm going to read. I've read Greenspan in the past, but I want to read a little bit more today. I want you to think about it, but I also want you to go to capsweb.org or Front Page Magazine or my own website, michaelcutler.net, because I want you to read this stuff. You're going to hear me say it now. I want you to see it as printed words. It's easier to really absorb. And if you go to the website and you see the articles I've written about Greenspan, you can click on the link or you can go to the Senate Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on Immigration. The videos are up. You can watch Greenspan with that syrupy, monotone, flat, lifeless voice drone on and say these terrible things. You know, he so infuriates me. The day after that hearing, this is back in 2009, I was on a radio show, and the young lady whose program I was on said, "What do you think of Greenspan? What did you think of his testimony?" I was so angry. I was so aggravated. I said, you know, I realized as I was watching Greenspan testifying that I was witnessing a first. And she kind of knew this was going to get ugly very quickly, but, you know, I just imagined her bracing herself, and she said, "Okay, Mike, what sort of a first was it?" And I said, "Well, it was the first time someone testified before a hearing who was suffering from rigor mortis." And this poor talk show host told me that she spent the rest of the show mopping up her mascara because she kept laughing every time she thought about the statement. But I have an absolute hatred for Alan Greenspan. These are people who are at the top of the food chain. These are people who have mansions in the Hamptons and probably mansions in other places around the world. These are the people that are referring to American workers as people making a wage premium, as you're going to see, and we're talking about the middle class. When millionaires look with envy at a middle-class worker who's highly skilled, highly educated, and very productive, and begrudges that middle-class struggling worker his or her paycheck while they're sitting in their lavish mansion that's the size of a hotel, I don't have enough fury in my blood to satisfy my urges here. You know, it is such an outrage. My dad said, "Live and let live." When you have a house and a roof over your head and some suits in the closet and a car in the driveway with a full tank of gas and food in the refrigerator, it's time to knock on your neighbor's door and see if you can help them. These are people who, no matter what they have, it's never, ever going to be enough. And they don't care if they destroy America. They don't care if they destroy the American dream for our citizens, because they are gorging themselves and can't stop feeding. They are like a malignant tumor. Cancers have an insatiable appetite for nutrients. They secrete hormones so that the body will bathe them in nutrients. Cancer is a very successful organism, if you want to call it that, because it's able to absorb far more nutrients than the healthy tissues of that body. But, you know, ultimately, when that cancer kills the victim, it dies with the victim. if these nitwits that need more wealth and their billions isn't enough, so they've got to do more and get more and keep gorging themselves, if they destroy this country, God forbid, waiting in the wings, it's not a matter of, well, England is waiting in the wings. It's not that Germany or Japan or Australia is waiting in the wings. I could sleep with that. You know, I could sleep at night if that were the case. I wouldn't be happy, but so be it. You know, the Yankees don't always win the World Series, right? But waiting in the wings for world domination are China, Russia, and Iran. What could possibly go wrong? We are talking about an existential threat, and these nitwits are playing with fire to satisfy their sick, twisted egos and their unbridled greed. That, folks, is what infuriates me. And these are the people that are pumping money into political campaigns, both sides of the aisle, so that no matter who wins, they win. That's their goal. More, more, more. Give me, give me, give me, give me. And what they are doing is buying the best government money can purchase. We now need a new official in our government called the official auctioneer. But I want to read this statement from Greenspan. First, he talks about how illegal aliens are a flexible labor force. And he acknowledges that it doesn't sit well with the American people that if people are here illegally, that they should get any kind of immigration benefit. But we need them. So, you know, the hell with the average American. I mean, the way Mr. Obama operates, the hell with the judges, the hell with Congress, the hell with the people. We want what we want, and we want it now. We want more of it every day. Again, this is a feeding frenzy. And so he even says that some evidence suggests that unskilled illegal immigrants, almost all from Latin America, marginally suppress wage levels of native-born Americans without a high school diploma and impose significant costs on some state and local governments. However, the estimated wage suppression and fiscal costs are relatively small. Relatively small to whom? If you're making $20,000 a year, every damn nickel is critical. This is a guy who can walk into an auto showroom and buy every car on the floor with pocket change. And he, you know, oh, the wage suppression is relatively small. Relative to whom? Who is his relative? And about the city and states that are going bankrupt, like California? Oh, don't worry about it. We've got to make our money here. You know, that's all he's focused on, and his buddies. And then we get to this. The second policy issue that must be addressed by Congress is the even more compelling need to facilitate the inflow of skilled foreign workers. Now, you have to understand that under immigration law, the term skilled workers is a very specific term. It doesn't necessarily mean what you think it means. It's not so much tradesmen like my dad, who was a plumber in the building trades. It's people who are the STEM folks, the engineers, the scientists, the cancer researchers, the technicians. These are what they call skilled labor. This is the middle class, the solid middle class jobs, the reason why we send our kids to college, the reason why student loans look like mortgage payments, so you can get those degrees to become a skilled American worker. So, he said, we need to facilitate the inflow of skilled foreign workers. Our primary and secondary school systems are increasingly failing to produce the skilled workers needed to utilize fully our ever more sophisticated and complex stock of intellectual and physical capital. Stock. That word stock is very interesting because when you go to the United Nations website, they refer to workers who move from country to country, and according to some statistics, it's nearly 4% of the world population, which is a huge number. There are 7 billion human beings inhabiting this planet. They refer to them as migrant stock. So here again, we see the word stuck, almost like we're talking about robots, you know, worker units. Why don't we call people that, worker units, right? Failing to produce the skilled workers needed to utilize our ever more sophisticated and complex stock of intellectual and physical capital, this capital stock, just like the labor, you know, the physical, the people stock, has been the critical input for our rising productivity and standards of living and can be expected to continue to be essential for our future prosperity. I want to know who our is because he's not talking about the middle class. Our future prosperity, as you will see, deals with him and Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and Bloomberg, the masters of the universe, folks, and you're going to see what I mean by that. The consequence of our educational shortfall is that a highly disproportionate number of our exceptionally skilled workers are foreign-born. Two-fifths of the science PhDs in our workforce, for example, are foreign-born. Silicon Valley has a remarkably large number of foreign-born workers. It's not that we don't have Americans who can do the job. In fact, Americans have been fired. Dan Rather did a story a while back called No Thanks for Everything, where he interviewed three or four highly skilled American computer programmers who had advanced degrees, who had been doing the job for years, and was suddenly fired and replaced by workers from India. So the fact that back in 2009, two-fifths were foreign-born, not because we don't have the workers here, folks. They're here. University studies show that they are here, and we're producing more every graduation. It's that they are losing their jobs or not being hired in the first place because the goal is to get rid of American workers and bring in people from India who will work for far less than American workers. Okay? And then he goes on and says, the quantity of temporary H-1B visas issued each year is far too small to meet the need, especially in the near future, as the economy copes with the forthcoming retirement wave of skilled baby boomers. You know what? This is about, they haven't retired yet, but they're going to. And when they do studies and ask people point blank, when do you plan to retire? Do you know how many Americans say they have no plans to retire because they fear that by retiring, they will not be able to support themselves? So many Americans lost so much out of their 401k programs, they're not planning to retire anytime soon. There are people working well into their 70s. Again, another lie, but it sounds good. It sounds good. As Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, succinctly testified before Congress in March 2007, quote, America will find it infinitely more difficult to maintain its technological leadership if it shuts out the very people who are most able to help us compete. He added that we are driving away the world's best and brightest precisely when we need them the most. Think of the Republicans who will say, well, this is about American exceptionalism. Well, if we talk about American exceptionalism, then the world's best and brightest have a name and they are called Americans. And Gates says that it's the foreign workers who are the world's best and brightest. Whose side do you think Gates is on? I had an argument with someone the other day about Bill Gates and all of his supposed philanthropic efforts in Africa. And this person said, oh, look at all the great stuff he's doing in Africa. I said, you know, I haven't even checked. But now that we're having the argument, go online and punch in Microsoft and the word Africa. See what you come up with. So I'm going to ask you folks out there to do the same thing. Go to your computer. When I get done, do it now. I want you to keep listening to me. But look at what's there when you go to Microsoft in Africa, and you will see that in 2013, Microsoft started to put in television networks in Africa. They're starting a massive development program in Africa. Bill Gates is looking for another marketplace for his garbage. That's what this is about. If you believe that Bill Gates is a philanthropist, if you think that the Clintons, after we heard this nonsense about the 10% of the hundreds of millions that they've generated with their foundation, if you believe that these people are truly philanthropists, then you would probably believe that the best way to feed mice is to put cheese on a mousetrap. Think about it. This is all about finding a new marketplace. It's all about finding a new place to build factories where people will work for less money. And it's about finding a place where they can get more natural resources so that they can build more computers and sell more stuff and make more money. They are in feeding mode. That's what this is about. And so then Greenspan goes on and says, our skill shortage, I trust, and that's not really a skill shortage, folks, but he says, our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved through reform of our primary and secondary education systems, but at best, that will take many years. An accelerated influx of the highly skilled immigrants would bridge that gap and, moreover, carry with it two significant bonuses. Skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. What contributed to the disabling of our banking system was this notion of giving subprime mortgages to people who could never pay them off, especially illegal aliens, where they use multiple false identities so you could never do a credit check. They came up with this notion of derivatives so they could spread the risk over a wider base so that hopefully when they did have defaults, it wouldn't be devastating. But, of course, we know what happened. It was devastating. They gambled. They lost. But then they won because they came to the American taxpayer and emptied out our accounts. Think about what happened. They screwed up, and we, the people, paid the damn price. You know, I just love bankers. Harry Truman described bankers by saying that they were no one's friend. They would only lend you money only after you could prove you didn't need it in the first place. My comment about bankers is two things. Number one, when they talk about products, I didn't know three-card Monty was a product. Number two, next time you have to mow the lawn or paint your house, call up the bank and see if you can get them to do their half of the house. Lots of luck. This is a swindle, folks. This is a scam. And then he says the second bonus, and this is really what's going to drive your blood pressure to dangerous levels. If you need blood pressure pills, take it now. Avoid the rush. The second bonus would address the increasing concentration of income in this country, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled, meaning engineers, scientists, programmers, folks, would lower wage premiums. Anybody out there earning a wage premium, money you didn't need in the first place? Think about that. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Goodness gracious, do you hear the words? Do you hear them? Privileged elite, wage premium, reduce income inequality between Americans with skills and Americans without skills. So how are we attaining wage equality? We're going to attain wage equality by slicing those wage premiums, the money that those middle-class workers didn't need because they are the privileged elite. Goodness gracious, where in the world does anyone have the guts to say it? And you tell me what news program covered that hearing or even talks about what Greenspan had to say to this very day. So this is what it's about. And we're told how lousy our schools are. Do you know that there's over a million foreign students studying in 9,000 schools in the United States, and many of those 9,000 are probably bogus schools and they're committing fraud? But we don't know it because we depend on the schools to tell us whether or not students attend. I mean, do you think that these schools that don't exist are calling up immigration and saying, oh, these guys aren't here? They just want the money. They're mills. Some of those schools are trade schools teaching people how to cut pets' hair or manicure fingernails. Do you really think someone's going to get on an airplane and fly halfway around the world to attend a school to learn how to give a dog a haircut or how to do woodworking? So a lot of those schools are a scam. But we also have foreign students attending our best universities. And guess which country sends us the most immigrants right now and has its students, more of its students in our schools than any other country? China. China. China, as it's building up its nuclear navy. If you saw the CBS 60 Minutes report a couple of weeks ago, they talked about how China has developed anti-satellite technology. They've already shot down one of their satellites and created a nightmare in orbit with all the debris that resulted. But China now has the capability to hit our satellites that are used for GPS. Imagine if they could knock out our GPS satellites. This isn't being done just because, hey, wouldn't it be fun to know if we can do it? This is very costly and very difficult, and they're working on it. Soon they will be able to reach geosynchronous orbits where we have our most valuable military and business satellites. China has no respect for copyrights. They have no respect for patent law. They are the bull in the tea shop, and they get their way because we have a president who allows them to get whatever they want, just like Iran. China is more than an economic adversary. The way they're building their navy, I want to know who they're planning to defend themselves against or perhaps go to war with. I always worry about countries that claim to be our partners when they build up a military and have no apparent adversary. So here's my question. How many of the engineers working on the nuclear navy of China, working on the Chinese fighter planes, and working on that anti-satellite technology were educated right here inside the United States? Why are we educating our competition? Does this make any sense to anybody? I want you to think about it. Just food for thought. But we're told that our schools do a lousy job. No, they don't. We're doing a lousy job as Americans allowing these buffoons to remain in office after they hold hearings like this. Chuck Schumer should have been sent packing years ago. But everybody in New York thinks he's such a nice guy. Well, I won't say everybody. Increasingly, people understand what this guy is really up to. He's never had a real job. Right out of college, he went to being a city council member, to the House of Representatives, to the U.S. Senate, just like the Clintons. He sees an awful lot in similarities with them. Meanwhile, what is this doing to Americans? What does this do to the American dream? You know, it's great to make these speeches about poverty and wage equality, but I think we know what wage equality really means. And, you know, this program is also available on podcast. Please, if you listen to it, you like it, forward the links to your friends. You know, my goal, because you know, I used to do as many as a dozen or 15 television interviews a month after 9/11. MSNBC, CNN, everybody wanted to know what the truth was. But the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and all these other little outfits, their goal now is to shut down the discussion. Disney, by the way, just fired most of their American IT workers and they're replacing them with people from India. Edison, the power company, California, just laid off hundreds of American computer programmers, replaced them with foreign workers on H-1B visas. Why? Is that a shortage? Of course it's not. In 2012, 60 Minutes did a report about how Obama went to Cape Canaveral and said, look, we're grounding the shuttle, but we're going to start the Orion program. It's a manned space program. Nobody here is going to lose their job. I think he said that a week before. He said, if you like your health care, you can keep it. These people were almost all fired. Technicians, engineers, other workers at the Cape, thousands, lost their job. Now, you would think that with all this talk about the shortage of engineers, that an engineer who worked on the space program, worked on the shuttle, sent American astronauts into space, think of what level of skill, proficiency, and institutional knowledge such engineers have to have been able to be part of that unbelievable program. The space shuttle was clearly the most sophisticated flying machine ever devised in the history of the human species. You would imagine that engineers who worked on it for three decades would provide such a wealth of experience and information that when they lost their jobs, everybody should have been scrambling to hire them. They're still out of jobs. One engineer that was interviewed on 60 Minutes back in 2012 said, look, I was even willing to take a job as a technician. He said, I can't find a job. But we have Greenspan saying, oh, we have all these jobs and we just don't have the workers. How come nobody called that engineer up or those thousands of other people at the Cape? Why are they firing those workers in California? Why is Disney now laying off? I'll tell you what, if ever I was inclined to go to Disney World, and I've been there when my son was very young, my oldest boy, I took him there, I will never go to Disney. You fire Americans, we fire you. Now, of course, they'll have no shortage of foreign visitors, which is why they want to have this program, the visa waiver program, which is very dangerous. You know, the 9/11 Commission warned us about the way we admitted aliens legally. And so what happens? Well, what happens is the 9/11 Commission said tighten up the visa process. On 9/11, we had 26 visa waiver countries. Today, we have 38 visa waiver countries. I want you to think about how crazy this is. We're being told that ISIS is setting up shop in American cities across the country. Now, clearly, that's a problem. Clearly, that's dangerous. And yes, some of them, obviously, some of these ISIS terrorists are indeed homegrown. But to date, with the exception of what happened in Dallas, and the Dallas deal had a happy ending, those two nitwits are with their virgins, I guess. I hope they're ugly and don't like the shower. but you know, all joking aside, this is a serious matter. It could have been a bloodbath. Now, they were Americans, and I'm sure there's other American sociopaths, losers that are out there. So they're going to, you know, grab the opportunity and say, wow, now I have a legitimate reason to kill people. How cool is that? I mean, that's how twisted these people are. That's, you know, of great concern to all of us. It's of concern to the FBI. It should be concern to every American. But we also have a huge problem with foreign nationals who are involved with terrorism. The Somali community, especially in Minnesota, and I went to Minnesota, I saw how closely knit that little enclave is. That's a problem. We have no idea who we're admitting into the United States. One of the people on the FBI's most wanted list of terrorists is a naturalized citizen who came here from Somalia, drove a cab in Washington, D.C. for years. I wrote about it for Progressives for Immigration Reform. I mean, this is dangerous. So just because we have some Americans who, you know, are homegrown terrorists doesn't mean that we should not be very much concerned about the prospect for international terrorists coming here and carrying out a deadly attack. And so understand how crazy this whole thing is, that we don't know who's here. We're providing people with identity documents without an interview. I want to read something to you. And I think this might have been what I read to that producer from 60 Minutes. I don't recall exactly what I read to him, but it was an interesting statement. And you know, I was just trying to get him to understand the issue. And so here we are. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries of terrorists without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. Okay, but we'll secure that Mexican border, folks. Amazing. In doing so, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. Because terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s, once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here, primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Many of these tactics would remain largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s and up to the 9/11 attack. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It remained largely unknown since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. So now you've got Rand Paul saying, let's have an amnesty program. You're having all these politicians saying, once we secure the Mexican border, we can give millions of people who snuck into the country lawful status and identity documents. And they all know that there's no resources to do a face-to-face interview. They all know that there's no resources to do a field investigation. And yet, this is what they're recommending. How insane is all of this? Ask yourself if there's any rational justification for this. Then think of the lunacy that we're hearing. We can't deport 11 million people. Well, it's probably 40 million, and no one's saying deport 40 million. But what we are saying is that if you're here illegally, there's got to be consequences, and the consequences shouldn't be a certificate of United States citizenship. There are more people who drive and have cell phones than there are illegal aliens in the United States, yet you've never heard a mayor or a chief of police from anywhere say, well, there's just too many people with driver's licenses and cell phones, so we can't do anything about people who are texting and driving. Right? We've never heard that. The message law enforcement tries to convey is, we don't care how many people are doing it. If you're doing it, we're going to find you. We're going to catch you. We're going to put you in jail. We're going to take away your car and your license, and we're going to fine you, and we're going to drop a safe on your head. Now, the reality is they may or may not find you. But they launch a massive public relations campaign. When they first started installing seatbelts in cars, almost nobody wore them. I did. Some of my friends did. But a lot of people I was friends with didn't. And the government came along and did a massive campaign called Click It or Ticket. They still use it, and it's very effective. Probably 90% of the motorists out there today drive with their seatbelts on because law enforcement has everyone convinced that if you drive without a seatbelt, you're screwed. We find you, we're going to ticket you. We're going to hammer you. Enforcement is the cure to anarchy. Break the law, there are consequences, except for immigration. So I want you to think about this. The government is running the legal and illegal system simultaneously next to each other. This is like being on the New Jersey Turnpike driving from New York to Washington. Right? Think about this. And so you get on the turnpike and you have two lanes. One says cash and the other says easy pass. And the cash lane, they give you a card, and then depending on how far you drive on the highway, you get off the highway, you give the person the card, and they tell you how much money you have to pay them. By easy pass, you don't even have to stop. They have these express lanes. You slow to 55 miles an hour, and there's a little transponder on your window, and you all have them, I'm sure, and the machinery is able to pick up the transponder, and it bills you for the amount of money. Well, now imagine if there was a third choice, a third lane that said free, no speed limit, also run by the New Jersey Turnpike Authority. Who in their right mind would buy an easy pass or go through the cash lane? Everybody would opt for the free, no speed limit lane. That's what the Congress wants. Free, no speed limit, because they have an insatiable appetite for cheap labor. Because this is what the people that are greasing their palms with those campaign contributions want. That's what this is about. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, with the hotel and hospitality industries, and the banks, and the universities. Think of all the people making money this way. Think of all the people making gazillions of dollars. This is the modern-day equivalent of slavery, cheap labor. And people say to me, well, Mike Cutler, how could you be a Democrat and want to enforce the immigration laws? Because if you think back to the days that we used to study labor as part of the curriculum back even in high school, especially high school, even college, they talked about how there were strikes and the formation of the AFL and the CIO. They were separate and they got together. Right, Walter Reuther and all those giants of the labor movement. And then Pinkerton started out not as a corporate security company, but as a bunch of guys wielding bats to break up picket lines. They would cave in people's skulls. This was war, and people were killed, and people were maimed. It was a bloody war. And they used to give a name to people who would cross the picket line. They were called scab labor. Well, today, folks, we are importing scab labor. See, I'm a Democrat. I'm a New Yorker. I tend to be liberal on many issues, although I'm a strong proponent for the Second Amendment. But on most issues, you'd say, yeah, Mike Cutler, he's a New Yorker. You know, that's how we are in New York City. And I believe in what I believe in, and that doesn't make us enemies, by the way. I want you to know that my friend Joe Dugan and his buddies down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, had me speak at a number of their Tea Party conventions. I was supposed to have spoken this past year. I came down with the world's worst case of laryngitis. I had no voice, and I was coughing my brains out, what few cells I still have. So I couldn't go this year, but for the three preceding years, they had me speak at their convention, knowing my orientation. And they were happy to hear what I had to say about immigration because we look for common ground. Americans are entitled to disagree. Disagreement and discourse is guaranteed to us in the First Amendment, the right for peaceable assemblage. Freedom of speech and the right for peaceable assemblage, those two right there are designed to encourage discourse, debate. All they said is leave the guns, the clubs, and the knives out of the discussion. Don't hurt each other, but otherwise have at it. That's what the democratic process requires. But anyway, so we're in this situation where my point is that if you're truly concerned about middle-class working families, blue-collar Americans like my dad, then you tend to be a Democrat, at least in New York City. And my friends who are Republicans when I was growing up had parents who generally owned businesses. And we understood that the two parties were looking out for the interests of their respective constituencies. That made sense. There was rhyme and reason to the world. Today, there is nobody on the side of the American worker. The Democratic Party has shifted so far to the left that it's fallen off the edge of the earth, and they could give a rat's tail about American workers. They don't care. They don't care. All they care about is bringing in more votes and placating the special interest groups that are willing to grease their palms with all sorts of money if they give them what they want. And, you know, when I hear the stories about Hillary Clinton with the foreign governments, you have to wonder how many of those foreign governments are saying to her, hey, listen, we want our people to work in the United States because they're counting on those remittances going back home to bolster their economy. You think about it. And so if that is the case, it makes perfect sense why Hillary is saying, hey, I'm going to give everybody who's here a U.S. citizenship certificate. These people don't want to be citizens, but they'll be dual nationals, which creates national security problems because then they can travel on two passports and cover their tracks. But she doesn't care about that. Bill Clinton with that aw shucks nonsense, you know, I got to feed my family. I got bills to pay? Really? So you're pocketing 90% of what are supposed to be charitable contributions, even from foreign countries? I mean, come on, folks. Do we look that stupid? Painful to listen to this garbage. All these people with their charitable organizations screwing Americans over left, right, and center. I am sick and tired of the Democratic Party talking about compassion. Go to Baltimore and look at compassion. Look what poverty looks and smells like. Really and truly. Go look and see what the stench of poverty is like. When I went to a retirement party for one of the guys I worked with for decades, my friend Bob came over, gave me a big hug. He said, Mike, I'm going to miss working with you here in immigration. I'm going to miss working with the other guys. The one thing I won't miss is the stench of poverty. I have gone into buildings, folks, where the rats were bigger than my dog, where the stench of the poverty, the rotting food, and oh my word, I can't even tell you what those buildings smell like. And this is where our children are growing up today. There's bullet holes in the wall. I mean, I can't begin to tell you, to describe to you the squalor that I've encountered. You go into an apartment where you see a bunch of illegal aliens stuffed into an apartment that was designed for a family of four, except now you've got people sleeping in shifts on filthy, bare mattresses laid on the floor, and when you go in and flip on a light switch, you see a moving wall. At least that's what, in our gallows humor, we called it. It was an apartment that was so filthy and so infested with bugs of every variety imaginable that when you turned on the light, those roaches and other bugs, God only knows what was there, an entomologist could have a field day, literally, they started scattering in every direction. It looked like the football stands with the fans doing the wave, and you couldn't figure out what color the paint of the wall was because the walls were encrusted with insects that were on the move. Poverty. I'd like to know the last time Bill and Hillary were in that kind of a building, experiencing it up close and in person. So when you have children living in that kind of an environment, my question isn't what will they do to get out of poverty. My question is what won't they do to get out of poverty? And if you have a situation where Americans aren't working, so they don't have a role model the way I did, my father, who I literally carried off his job his last day of work, dying of lung cancer. I was 19 and he was 57, and he got cancer because, number one, he worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War. Number two, he was exposed to asbestos in the building trades. And number three, he had a god-awful three-pack-a-day Chesterfield cigarette habit. He would go to work sick as a dog. And I'd say, Dad, why don't you stay home? He'd say, Mike, are you going to pay the rent? Are you going to pay my bills? But if you don't have a role model like I had and my mom and dad, I guess it becomes easier to do other things. So you add that kind of lawlessness to that kind of poverty, and then you have politicians who by their words and deeds are even more lawless than the rioters were. Washington has done far more damage to America and Americans than the rioters in Baltimore and all the other rioters that we've seen over the last decade. You think about the damage done by politicians who have no regard to their oath of office or the laws that they supposedly promulgated. It's amazing to me. They're the legislators. They are the ones who write the laws, and they're the ones who say, don't worry about the laws. Chucky baby, Chuck Schumer says, hey, you know, the reason people trespass on the Brooklyn Bridge and the Manhattan Bridge, they climb the new Freedom Tower, although it's just called the World Trade Center, was supposed to be the Freedom Tower, and they did a base jump, some people. They jumped in the middle of the night with their parachutes. Luckily, nobody hurt, and they were subsequently arrested. He said, oh, well, the reason they trespassed is the penalties aren't severe enough to deter that kind of conduct. He said, you want to stop trespassing? Right now, the max they face is a year in jail, but in reality, they're not going to get to do more than 3 months in jail, if that much. So that's why they trespass. He said, the way you stop trespassing is this should now be a five-year crime. Climb the cable on the Brooklyn Bridge. You should sit in a cell for a half decade. Boy, Chuck is tough, isn't he? He's so macho. Wow. He's not my hero. I'll tell you one thing. Because in Chuck Schumer world and in Mayor Bloomberg world and in de Blasio world, when you trespass on America, you're entitled to citizenship. Does this make sense to anybody? So you have lawless leaders in Washington. This is what passes for leadership. And the Republicans are no damn better. They're no damn better. They are thrilled that Obama's doing this because they wanted to do it. So now look what happens. They can make their speeches, get the photo opportunity, and hope that the idiots that voted them into power will think that they're really tough because, oh, that speech. But meanwhile, they don't talk about national security. They just talk about the rule of law, for which they have no respect themselves, by the way. But meanwhile, the aliens are here. Their campaign contributors are happy. And they get to make statements before the cameras criticizing the Democrats and the administration. The Republicans have it best of all. They're happier than anybody. They win, and they keep on winning, and they keep on taking the campaign contributions next to their Democrat friends. And I'm really convinced that when you look at how the guys went into that Room of Eight deal, with the Gang of Eight, they went into that room, and if you read the newspaper accounts, they said they kept their staffers out of the meeting. And maybe that didn't mean anything to most people. It meant plenty to me. Because I work with the staffers, and I know members of Congress, people like Lou Barletta, who's a personal friend. But, you see, I know how the staffers operate. So I think that those eight people went into the room and they said, okay, we better not have the staffers here because everyone will know that this is a fight like the fights I used to watch when I was a young boy in Brooklyn and the wrestlers would go at it, Buddy Rogers and Haystacks Calhoun and Antonina Rocca, And I thought that these guys were really bloodying each other, and it was probably ketchup, you know. But it was this big fight to the death, and it was a fake fight. And I think that the Gang of Eight had a fake fight also. So they could go in there and say, we fought, and boy, oh boy, and we broke bones and we bloodied them, but okay, we worked it out. What a battle that was. They would probably be sitting there telling jokes. Gang of Eight, my rear end. See, both sides of the aisle are getting exactly what they want, and what they want is giving us, we the people, the shaft. This is about the cheap labor that Greenspan described. You think about what you're hearing from these members of Congress today, both sides of the aisle and the administration, and you look at what Greenspan had to say. And that's why nobody will talk about the 9/11 Commission report. Because if you hold that report and that paragraph I read to you up and say, how does this square? The answer is, everything that we're doing violates common sense, it violates morality, it violates the law, and it violates the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, even as we're being warned that there are terrorists now being tracked by the FBI in each and every one of our 50 states. Not the four border states, boys and girls. Every one of our 50 states. Every one of our 50 states, we have terrorists living there. Not a shock to me. And if you've been following the news, it shouldn't be a shock to you. And they still, it will not, under any circumstances, talk about the role of immigration. They'll talk about more surveillance. They'll talk about more whatever. But whatever you do, make sure you never say immigration. That's unbelievable. And that's something that we have to push back against. In any event, I want you to know that it's always good catching up with you at the end of the week, trying to provide you with the information that, frankly, nobody else is going to provide you with. There's too much of an agenda out there, folks, and the agenda is to keep those contributions from the corporations and those who benefit from the current state of affairs to keep on coming in. And meanwhile, watch how the economy is spiraling down. And nothing that we're doing makes any sense. This is like driving the wrong way on a one-way street and being told, go faster so you'll get through the block quicker. Doesn't make sense, but that's what they're doing. That's why Whole Foods, which is normally seen as this elite restaurant for the elite food store for the wealthy, is now starting a cheaper subsidiary. Macy's, from what I've read, is looking to do the same thing. The economy is going south. The economy is going south. And yet, what are we doing about it? Is there anything that we are doing as a country that makes sense as we bring in more foreign workers, displace more American workers, create a greater burden for our schools, create a greater burden for our hospitals, watch more money leave the country in remittances, and then you're going to watch tomorrow and Sunday, the talking heads on TV, they're going to scratch their heads and say, gee whiz, I don't know. They created these jobs, and unemployment is down to 5.4%, but the economy's not getting any better. By the way, that's the other point. 5.4% unemployment rate down from, yeah, I mean, come on. Really? We're ignoring tens of millions of foreign, of American workers who, aren't looking for jobs anymore, who are disenfranchised. I was born on a Wednesday, folks, not last Wednesday. But really what you need to do is reach out to those so-called news organizations. I'm serious. Call 60 Minutes. Call 2020. Call the New York Times. Tell them that they're a bunch of imbeciles. You know, they will respond because they're depending on viewership and readership for their money. If people aren't willing to watch the programs, read the newspapers, they lose revenue. Call the members of Congress. Make it clear to them that we're on to them, that we know that they're lying. When Jay Johnson says, oh, we need comprehensive reform to get the illegals out of the shadows, Lou Barletta went after him and said, really? Do you really think criminals are going to come out of the shadows? And Jay Johnson eventually admitted that they wouldn't. So how does that help us? And he said, well, why aren't you following the 9/11 Commission report, which is something that I've discussed with Lou many times. We have conversations all the time, he and I. I said, there's the question you need to ask. So Lou asked my question. And Jay Johnson's answer was, well, there are many provisions of the 9/11 Commission that I wish we could do something about. Is that an answer, folks? I wish we could do something about it? Why didn't you pre-flight the airplane, Captain? Gee, I wish we had the time. I hope we don't crash. What? I wish we would do it? You're the head of Homeland Security and you wish we would follow the 9/11 Commission? This is an absurdity. It's a dangerous absurdity. The other question that Lou should have asked, that I would have asked if I was there, what resources do you have to look for those aliens who refuse to come out of the shadows? That would have been the 1-2 punch. And I'm going to tell you what the answer is. There are no resources to look for them. This is just a false argument. And when they say, well, if they've been living here for 7 years, how do you know how long anyone's been living here? If they run the border, there's no record created of their entry. There's no face-to-face interview and no capacity to do a field investigation. What keeps somebody from just writing down the right answers on that sheet when they make their application? And the answer is, there's nothing to stop them. That's what fraud is, a lie on paper that gives somebody a benefit that if all the material facts were known, they would not be legally entitled to that benefit. So look at how twisted this is. And then they talk about a security check. All they do is run fingerprints and the name that the alien claims is his or her name. Again, if they're undocumented, it's hard to prove what their name is or even what their country of citizenship is. And more than likely, unless they've been fingerprinted in the United States or a handful of countries that are close allies of the United States, most times those fingerprints are going to come back no record. So what kind of a check is that? It's barely more significant than nothing. And, you know, I have a famous expression. I always remind people that the only thing worse than no security is false security. But things are getting critical. We're concerned about the terrorists. The economy is going south. And yet, nobody is willing to talk about all these issues in an honest and forthright way. Except here I am, happy to join you on every Friday. I hope you find this helpful. I know it's not uplifting. But the first step to solving a problem is to identify the problem. And that's my mission on this program. Again, I ask you, please go to michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform. Just go to PFIR. Also, please check out The Social Contract. And please, folks, spread the word to your friends and neighbors. We've got to wake Americans up. And please get involved. You know, I always like to remind people, democracy is not a spectator sport. We'll see you next week at the same time. Meanwhile, have a great weekend. Good night, everybody.